Charlton, bless. Just making sure we're ready. He's like, nobody faint. We're going to start the show.
We are going to start the show. I hear the music.
Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, the daily podcast where we make today make sense.
Just yes, ramping up the energy. Today, it's Happy Hour Friday. I'm Kimberly Adams, and so this is also known as Economics on Tap. The live stream is up and running. Thank you to everyone joining us on the live stream on YouTube, on Discord, on Twitter, if it's your pleasure. Yeah, all the things. Hi, everyone. I'm Kimberly
Adams.
Happy
to see you all. Look at that.
I forgot to say.
The chat is going bananas. It is delightful. Everybody loves to see Kimberly. How are you?
Thanks.
And more importantly, I prepare for my shame. What are you drinking? I need to order some shrub and like some fancy cocktails. Girl, it's so hot here. I'm having a Mexi Coke. I'm like, I need to hydrate with sugar. That's literally all I can do.
Yeah, that works. So I had a small 4th of July get together at my house, and one of my friends, who apparently loves me more than I knew, brought me this very fancy bottle of scotch. So it's called the Torin Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. It's 12 years old, and so I'm going to have some of this for...
This makes me feel great, because
I broke the cork.
No! Mayday.
Well, that's just a tragedy.
Oh, no.
Anyway, what are you
drinking? Can you push it down in there? I guess you can't really decant that. Both having Mocktail Friday. Hope you got some water there with ya. Would you like me to vamp for a minute while you go and get a bevy? Because we can do this.
No. I'm going to
I'll read the comments. I'll find out what everybody else is visiting.
Excuse me one second. Marcella, can you bring me a bottle of water, please?
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Everyone's like, no! Live. Tim Anderson, shut it down. What is even the reason now? Hilarious. Corkscrew. Can your niece bring you a corkscrew? Is that legal?
No, that's okay. Aww. I'll have water. It's good to make healthy choices. What's everybody else drinking?
I know exactly. You tell us what you're...
I'm going to wheel away for a second.
Permission to make a corkscrew run. Bishop Cider. Let's see. We've got Union Jack. There's a bunch of beer stuff in here. There's a bunch of beer in here. And no one's taking shots because I do not have tequila. Trying to stay hydrated.
Yes, hydration is key. Warm. Water is a good life choice for all of us. I see Beach Bohemian Craft Beer. Let me check out what is happening in the Discord. What are people drinking in here? Let's see. Water.
Rye Manhattan. Cranberry tea from Sonic. Interesting. 47 Monkeys and Tonic
Topo Chico plus Bitter Milk Burnt Grapefruit Bitters plus Lime. Okay.
See? Wow. All right, well, good. It's good to know the chat is bringing the complicated drinks. We're just going to bring you the news and our fun game, half full, half empty, and then roll on into the weekend. I want you to go first on the news because I'm in love with this topic that you're bringing today.
Well, I wanted to sort of tangentially relate it to the actual news. So we're getting a lot of rain here on the East Coast, left over from Hurricane Elsa. And in New York, it's just crazy, like the rain coming down, or it's really wild. And there were these videos of the flooding and the subway and all this stuff. And climate change. So The Guardian has this piece that where the headline is basically New York City's storm flooding shows that climate change is real, you know, basically. If you didn't believe it yet. So all of this works because of an epiphany that I had last night that I have been sharing with everyone who will listen to me. Because since my niece is here, I've been watching more kid content. And so last night we were watching this new TV show on Disney Plus, which is like from the Monsters, Inc. franchise called Monsters at Work. And I suddenly realized that this is all about climate change and the fossil fuel industry. The whole Monsters, Inc. franchise. Because if you think about it, the Monsters, Inc., they rely on a particular type of extractive energy generation, which involves harming children. And then someone discovers a brand new way of getting energy that isn't as harmful to children. And then the big industry fights back and says, no, you can't do that. That's a whole, I don't want to give away the rest of the plot of Monsters, Inc. But in this new TV show, basically, they have this young monster who's been training his whole life to be a scarer. And then he shows up at work on the first day to realize that they don't need scarers anymore. They need people who are funny, or monsters who are funny. And he has to go through retraining. And amazing. It's just, you know, so anyway, I couldn't believe it's that I missed fuels. It the first time.
Yep, totally.
And then it was banging.
Same.
It sort
Same.
Of. Right? And so I found one other person apparently had this epiphany a couple of weeks ago and wrote about it for, I believe, a newspaper in Australia. And I don't know, that just sort of like floored me. And apparently you too, when I slacked you.
I know. I mean, I really truly had not thought of it at all. And then this Flicks piece from Australia notes that, in fact, if it sounds like an ambitious reading, it's so obvious, writes this person, I almost felt ashamed for not noticing it earlier. Like, they literally, you know, a scene apparently in the beginning of the first movie, according to this piece, is like, yeah, it's a new commercial for the mining company-like employer with images of hard hat-wearing staff and a voiceover explaining that they extract energy used to power every light bulb, vehicle, appliance in the city, and that change is afoot and the energy industry isn't what it used to be. Grr, grr. Yeah, like, of course, Pixar, you stinkers. I mean, WALL-E... is like the original climate change movie. And so it shouldn't even surprise us, but it's so brilliant. It's everywhere.
Now, I should acknowledge that when Monsters University came out, there's this blog called from the University of Texas at Austin called Energy at the Movies about how energy is represented on the big screen. They wrote about it in 2013 when Monsters, Inc., Monsters University came out, which was the prequel to Monsters, Inc. Wow, these movies came out a long time ago.
They really did. I mean, that's pretty remarkable, too. It tells you how long we have been. It tells you how long we have been stuck in inaction about climate change, but that it's been, like, really at the forefront of even mainstream consciousness, and that we didn't even catch it, let alone, you know, do enough to stop it or slow it down.
Wah, wah. Wah, wah.
Well, that's
anyway,
so funny because
I'm watching it with a whole new like lens now.
I know. Now I want to watch that and the show over the weekend and just be like, oh, so good. Evidently, it's they describe an energy crisis. I mean, it's just really on the nose. Almost as on the nose as this article I read in The Atlantic that I just want everyone to read. It's from a couple of days ago, July 7th. Basically, next week, I believe, is when a couple of billionaires are going to launch themselves into near-Earth orbit, not even technically space. Richard Branson is trying to beat Jeff Bezos. It's just a whole thing that I know we're all riveted by as a country. Or we are taking the Atlantic's view, which is, hey, read the room. Like, huge chunks of the East Coast are underwater. The fire season has already begun. The middle of the country and all the way west is in what is being lovingly termed a mega drought. We're still trying to vaccinate enough people that we don't just have like needless deaths over and over in the United States and across the world from a pandemic. And these dum-dums are in a rocket measuring contest to see who can get to low Earth orbit first. Sorry.
Did you wait until I took a sip of water for that one?
No, it was totally an accident, and I happened to see it just at the exact same, the exact right moment. I really apologize. But, like, guys, seriously, leaving Earth right now, writes, hold on, I want to get the author right, writes Shannon Sterone, isn't just bad optics. It's almost a scene out of a twisted B-list thriller. The world is drowning and scorching, and two of the wealthiest men decide to race in their private rocket ships to see who can get to space a few days before the other. Gross. That I just want y'all to read because it's a really good piece, and I believe, as so often happens with The Atlantic, puts the finger right on the pulse of what we were trying to say but couldn't quite come up with the words of. The big news, of
but
course,
they
today
have a
was
lot
this
more
big
words than we have in radio.
They do. Like, they do. We just have these like short little. Yeah. I mean, we have this, like, which is awesome.
This is awesome. By the way, lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you. I know. Still, I would like the audience to know we're going to pull behind the curtain. Still, Kimberly and I have never met in person.
Never, ever.
Still, all these many years of friendship and co-hosting. And then, of course, you will probably hear a lot more about this on Marketplace. I'm not going to go on and on, but I do think it's really fascinating that today is the day President Biden signed this executive order to essentially just sort of like encourage everyone to do some dang competition in the United States, which is such a fascinating, you know, it is, there's only so much an order like this can do without legislation and without agency support. Certainly there are now people in place at these agencies who can do some stuff, like Lena Khan, who is already getting after it. And I think it's, who did they pick for the FCC? It's still the interim person that we talked to not that long ago. It's so hot, guys. It's so hot. My brain's just not working. Anyway, it's fascinating. And it is just sort of an attempt to like belatedly address the fact that we just let companies get outrageously large in this country and buy each other up and reduce competition until, you know, we're left with and until. But it's so interesting because it seems to counteract this like years long gaslighting that's been happening where consumers are like, dude, I only have one internet provider. No, you don't. You have lots. Well, okay, no, I have, there are three or four regional monopolies. That's not a monopoly. There's competition. Yeah, but I only have one. There's plenty of competition. What? Right? And so along comes the Biden administration and this executive order to say like, yeah, no, it turns out you're right. Like, it turns out that companies are kind of abusing everyone because they're so big that they can. And it's an interesting direction to sort of try to put the country on. And it comes, actually, a friend of mine was driving for Postmates during the pandemic and forwarded me a note about how Uber, which bought Postmates, thereby taking some food delivery competition out of the game, has sent an email to everybody who used to drive for Postmates saying the app that you used to drive for Postmates is going away. We're only, you're only driving now for Uber or Uber Eats as a delivery person. Now, that makes sense as a back-end move. Sure, consolidate your properties. But people have been reporting, if you kind of like do a Twitter search, problems with the Postmates app, not logging them in or saying this account's already in use on Uber Eats or sort of gently directing them away, which raises the question of whether Uber did in fact buy Postmates, taking a competitor off of the market to kill it, which is the kind of thing that I believe the Biden administration will be frowning on going forward.
It's a big task because there are so many companies that have done this for so long, and there are so many to unwind. And that executive order, you know, also called for the government agencies to sort of look back at some previously approved mergers to see if they were appropriate. Unwinding those takes all sorts of legal challenges and you know, you kind of have to wonder with everything going on if the government has enough lawyers for everything that it's taking on. Because every almost every single line of that and the reaction from businesses that and industry groups that I got in my inbox today were, we're very concerned about free market competition and blah, 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 a.k.a. you try this, we're going to sue you. And we are going to drag it out in court until hopefully there's a friendlier administration. This is what often ends up happening. I was moderately entertained to see on this list that the Biden administration plans to make it easier for Americans to buy discount drugs from Canada, which, if one wants to go back just a few years ago, President Trump and his administration also planned to do. They had a huge rollout, big announcement. HHS and in the pharmaceutical industry was furious, and health insurance plans were furious and all these things. And I remember emailing them, the Department of Health and Human Services, every couple of weeks for a few months, like, when is this actually going to happen? When are you going to do this? And they were just like, we don't have a date yet. We don't have a date yet. And then they just stopped responding. And it just didn't happen.
It was Canadian Drugs Week.
Right. And Canada was furious too. They were like, don't do that. The Canadian government was like, don't do that. We need our cheap drugs. So I bring that up because executive orders tell government agencies to do a thing or to start working on a thing. That does not necessarily mean said thing will happen. Just a tiny grain of salt. But
or even can happen. And as you point out, these companies have tons of money for lawyers because we let them get so big.
Well, and also the meteoric rise of the stock market and low interest rates, then the money that they were supposedly going to use to pay their employees more and invest in infrastructure and grow, and instead they'd use it for stock buybacks. But, you know.
So the Fed just gave them a bunch of money to fight these orders with. That's so great. That's so very circular. Very circular. So I'm getting the impression that we're half empty on the executive order, which seems like a good way to transition.
I'm not.
No, but it's a huge philosophical shift. It's a big deal. But let's play the game, shall we?
Let's play the game.
This is, if you are just joining us for a Friday, Half Full, Half Empty, the game where we give you our predictions on various topics that we have not been informed of in advance, which is occasionally why you hear some frantic duck-duck going in the midst of us trying to come and answer. Marketplace heartthrob Drew Jostad is back in the studio. Drew.
All right, we're going to start this one out with an oldie but a goodie. Are you half full or half empty on the Ever Given?
It's free! She's out! I mean, I guess I'm half full on it, you know, on them paying their fine and getting let out of the pokey. But isn't it just going to end up sideways back in there again next time it comes around?
Oh, Erica Phillips with the win. The ship has sailed.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. If you missed it, the owners of the Ever Given did manage to come up with their bail money and spring that gigantic ship. No word yet on whether we're about to enter a golden new age where we don't build ships so big that they can't make it through the canal.
Well, having been in the Suez Canal for a media junket at one point, it's very, very narrow by any kind of modern standards. They went through this big effort several years back to widen it, and it was this huge thing. They were selling bonds for it, and it's a lot. So is it that the Suez Canal is too narrow, or that the ships are too big, or whatever? And who's going to pay to widen it? And, you know, maybe some of this money will go to widening it, but it's probably just going to offset the losses that Egypt had from all of it with or it'll just go to the military. Who knows?
I'm going to steal as my final answer what Debbie Donovan says in our YouTube chat, which is the whole Ever Given situation is half full because it gave us visibility into supply chain issues.
Indeed. Boom. Half full.
Love it.
Go, Debbie.
All right, what's next?
Next.
Okay, are we half full or half empty on the idea that COVID is going to destigmatize resume gaps?
Oh, is this a thing?
For some people, half full. For people who are already normally disenfranchised.
Stigmatized.
No. Stigmatized, half empty. In a magical, ideal world, every working parent, because there is a logical explanation for why you might need a gap in your resume to raise a child, they wouldn't be judged for that. But we know what child rearing is, and people still face all sorts of consequences for that. So having a good reason?
I mean,
half empty.
If anything, the labor market, it seems to me, will do the work of dealing with Like, you will still have all the same inequities, but it just might be easier to get a job, not just because it's harder to hire. Like, so if that is because of COVID, then I guess in a roundabout way, then COVID will maybe destigmatize resume gaps. But I think the main thing is just, like, if a company is in a town, in a specific town, hiring anybody with a pulse, then maybe the resume won't matter so much.
Yeah, so I guess a COVID pandemic length resume gap may be acceptable, but any of the people who end up long-term unemployed, which is going to disproportionately affect older workers and workers of color and women, that's a big chunk of the economy, it's going to disproportionately affect a lot of people. I think people who suffer from long-term unemployment out of this are not going to get that same amount of grace, but probably people who only have that gap. If you worked in the restaurant industry and your resume gap only lasts as long as restaurants were closed, everyone will ignore it. Maybe. But anybody longer than that, probably not.
Seems like half literal empty. Half full. Yep. Okay, half empty. Seems like literal half. We have landed in the
half.
Middle. Okay, half empty it is.
Yes.
What's next, Drew?
Are you half full or half empty on Fox Weather?
See, this is the part where I'm like, Fox Weather.
Later this year, Fox is set to debut their 24/7 weather streaming channel.
Oh, okay. I found it on Marketplace.
Yes.
$4.99 a month. Go, please.
Yeah.
Help. Yes.
So the Fox News Channel wants its own weather channel. People like to watch weather. Look, I am from Missouri. We spend a lot of time watching weather. Although we did have a tornado here in D.C. the other day, random, usually doesn't happen. But I can imagine it's a big lucrative growth market, because you know what people aren't watching Fox for anymore? Politics. Because with Trump out of office, that was a big draw for them. And he's kind of a liability to put on air right now because of the things that he might say that would open you up to a lawsuit. And so you have... the viewership, kind of as Trump predicted, fell off. And so if you're looking at growth areas, you know, weather, people will like to watch weather. Climate change means that there will be more weather. Now, whether they will acknowledge human-caused climate change is another question altogether.
I mean, I have to be honest, I have built-in skepticism about, and that is not to say that some of the folks at Fox News, who are not the people in its primetime lineup, don't do good work and have sometimes felt the tension of the stuff that makes it on air at Fox. It is very possible they will hire a bunch of weather professionals who will put, you know, straight up weather on the air. But if it's a way to kind of like have a weather channel that attempts to downplay or debunk climate change, and I think we have good reason to wonder if that's the case, I'm half empty. I don't know.
I don't know. I at one point in my life, I actually worked for Fox, and they were always very like nice to me, and I know a lot of the professionals who work in that organization, and especially in like
they're
the
in a
radio
tough spot.
Division, and just like really trying to do the work. And so I always hate to paint with the broad brush Fox, but what they've been doing in their opinion and commentary and even some of the hard news coverage has just been really damaging. So I'm going to have to say half empty, fortunately.
Yeah.
Drew, is there anything nicer?
Are you half full or half empty on Chipotle accepting resumes via TikTok?
Yeah, I'm going to go half full on that. I love it.
Me too.
There's so much
creativity.
Go where the people are. You can really show yourself.
Go where the people are. Love it.
Go where the people are. Half
full. Can you do like a TikTok as a resume? That's great. That's genius. I love it.
I mean, it's kind of like an audition reel or something.
Yeah, love it. Good job, Chipotle, I think. Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
Phew. That was a tough one.
That was
one,
a hard
man.
One. This
I
was
really
a hard
did.
Game today. I'm exhausted.
Well, especially, maybe it was because both of us had, like, no alcohol. Is the game more fun when we drink?
Sweating. Maybe. Then we just let it all hang out. Stupid billionaires. Anyway. That's it for us today.
That is it. That's it for us today. We will be back next week. In the meantime, please send us your comments and questions via email or voice memo. And we are at makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Yes. Email us.
My water.
I'm sad that I didn't get to hang out with that scotch. Today's episode of Make Me Smart was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Stephen Beyond produces our favorite game, Half Full, Half Empty, and the YouTube live stream. He's the busiest man on Fridays.
The senior producer is Bridget Bodner. The executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves. And shout out to Tony Wagner, keeping it live in the Discord as well.
T-Wags, making friends of the Discord. We do. We're going to need a follow. We're going to need a TikTok of you getting that cork out of the scotch. Because you can't decant the whole thing.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.